Blog Talk Radio.
Find out life's this game of inches. So is football. Because in either game, life or football, the margin for error is so small. I mean, one half a step too late or too early, and you don't quite make it. One half second too slow, too fast, you don't quite catch it. The inches we need are everywhere around us.
Hell yeah.
They're in every break of the game. Every minute, every second. On this team, we fight for that inch. On this team, we tear ourselves and everyone else around us to pieces for that inch.
Good evening, all, and welcome in to another Fred Hell Sports' Red Zone Blitz. Fred Hell's my coming to you here on December 15th. And when you take a look at the calendar, it still doesn't feel like it around here. Certainly doesn't feel like December 15th. Might look like it. I mean, the studio areas are slowly but surely getting kind of festively decorated, but I'll tell you, it doesn't feel like it. But it is, nonetheless, we only have about 3 weeks remaining to the NFL season. 2015 version, that is. Week 14 now down in the books. And a number of things occurred this past week, and we're going to get into a couple of those. But I guess the question I throw out there for everybody that would care to participate this evening or jump in with us, what was the single biggest, not biggest, I guess, but what was the single event or single game or the outcome of a single game this past weekend that you feel may have had the greatest impact on potentially what may be the playoffs? What event or what circumstances or what outcome of a game perhaps maybe played one of the bigger potential outcomes in what the playoffs may be? For instance, could it be something like the Cincinnati Bengals losing Andy Dalton? Could it be something like that? Now, look, Cincinnati's going to make the playoffs, whether Andy Dalton's there for the, whether he's there for those remaining three games or not. Of course, right now they're saying that, hey, we might get Dalton back during the playoffs. We'll talk about that one. But they're going to make the playoffs. But how far into the playoffs can they possibly go without Andy Dalton? So, little things like that. Some of the other headlines we saw coming out of last week. So much talk, so much brouhaha, so much nonsense talk coming from one LeSean McCoy. Nonetheless, though, the Eagles persevered in that game. No problem for the Eagles. No problem. Yeah, 3 points. 3-point difference. Eagles came away with a 3-point win, 23-20. But just what they needed to take them to 6-7 and stay in the hunt in the NFC East. The Chiefs have won 7 in a row. How about that one? The Atlanta Falcons, though, have dropped 6 in a row. And rumors out there, well, down there, that perhaps maybe Dan Quinn has already lost his locker room? Boy. Or is that just a lot of, hey, we've lost 6 in a row kind of talk? Panthers are now 13-0. Not a surprise necessarily. But how about the Seattle Seahawks? 8-5. Many thought, and I think myself included, thought perhaps maybe Seattle wasn't all that. But they've firmly got themselves right now in position for one of the two wild cards, easily. And Broncos fans now are suddenly going, listen, when's Peyton coming back? Yeah, that's what after they lost to the Oakland Raiders. Just a couple of things that we'll be talking about here, and if anybody wants to jump in, don't hesitate. That's why we've got a phone number for you to call. That's why we do this, excuse me, right here on Blog Talk Radio, so that you guys out there can participate as well. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us. 347-826-9964. If you are on a computer and you're Skype capable, just hit the Skype button on our Blog Talk Radio, on the Blog Talk Radio program, and that should put you through to us loud and clear. Otherwise, you can hit us up in the chat room, leave a message there, or, well, you can hit me up over on Twitter, at Frat House Mike. I'll be putting out our weekly NFL sports, Frat House Sports poll here in just a bit, once we get to a couple of the topics there. But let's do this. Let me get my partner in crime for this program in here with me, and that's Brandon. Brandon, I posed a question to you that I just posed out to everybody else there. Any single event or any single game outcome this past week that kind of jumps out at you as potentially having a more greater impact on the potential of the playoffs than any others, perhaps? Anything that you can think of?
I think Andy Dalton and the Bengals, you know, Andy Dalton being hurt with a broken bone in his hand. Granted, it's his non-throwing hand, but nonetheless, I think that's going to hurt Cincinnati a little bit down the run. They were pretty much in a, you know, they were in the catbird seat sitting at the number one seat going into the week. And, you know, now they're fighting with Denver for number three and two and three. Because New England picked the game up on both of them this week. So I think that's probably the biggest. I mean, because realistically, yeah, there's been other injuries. I mean, LeGarrette Blount going down for the Patriots isn't good. But, you know, as a Patriots fan, I'm just like, all right, Belichick will figure out how to make Monte Ball the next, you know, it guy, I guess. Hopefully. Gronk came back pretty healthy. That was a big improve, you know, big help in the passing game. Edelman's a couple weeks away yet, so, you know, I guess LeGarrette Blount's, you know, bad, but it's, I don't think it's as crushing as Andy Dalton is to the Bengals at this moment in time. You know, other than that, I mean, yeah, there were some other things that kind of stood out. I mean, the Colts and Texans are fighting out for the AFC South. Granted, neither one of them are that good, but they're doing it with their second and third string quarterback, you know, in both cases. So, you know, I mean, if you look at the Texans, they started out with Ryan Mallett, but Brian Hoyer and TJ Yates is their third guy now. And then you had, you know, in Indianapolis, Andrew Luck's down, and now Matt Hasselbeck's walking around in a sling. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's a division, you know, one of those two is going to win the division, but they're going to do it, you know, wounded for sure.
Yeah. And it very well likely may look an awful lot like the NFC East before we're finished with it. That's for sure. In other words, you could have a winner of that division coming out of there with, say, an 8-8 record. You know, I hear what you're saying about the, you know, about losing Dalton for the Bengals and that, you know, oh, yeah, as I point out, of course, listen, Cincinnati's going to make the playoffs, but as you point out, rightfully so, it now becomes a seeding issue, you know, because yep. you get that number one, that number two seed, you get the bye, which, listen, hey, if Dalton's out, that would be great for Cincinnati. They would love that, but they would get that bye.
Mm-hmm. I actually heard that that bye might be key because that might be just enough time to get Dalton back in the lineup per se, mm-hmm. you know, ready to go if they get that bye. You know, if they need him sooner than the bye week, it could get ugly because, you know, he's got to have a certain level of functionality, I think, even out of his non-throwing hand, you know, for a running play. So I don't, you know, it's good it's not his throwing hand, but the same time, it's not something I don't think you can just play through, you know.
Well, you got to be able to grip with your non-throwing hand nonetheless
exactly.
on the ball. So You know, while people are bringing it up, and I've heard that brought up. Well, it's his non-throwing hand. Hey, wait a minute. How much do you know about football? You do have to grip the ball with two hands, for God's sake. And I hear what you're saying about, you know, the seeding issue and the fact that they might be, you know, that they're, you know, obviously mathematically they are grappling with the Denver Broncos. But suddenly, perhaps maybe the Broncos looked a little bit flawed this past week.
You know,
I mean,
do play each other, too, coming up in a week or so.
Right.
That'll make it even more interesting.
But Denver looked terribly flawed. Brock Osweiler, I mean, a lot of people thought, okay, hey, serviceable dude. He's going to get us through this mess, you know. But, boy, that game on Sunday against the Raiders was really very – I mean, they didn't score a touchdown. There were no touchdowns scored by Denver in that game at all. Everything was field goals, four field goals in the game, and they lost by 3 points to the Oakland Raiders, 15-12. A lot of Denver Broncos fans now sitting back going, Peyton's coming back when? Peyton's coming back when? You know, just a week ago, 2 weeks ago, everybody, myself included, kind of saying, well, you know, maybe Peyton ought to just – maybe he ought to just take a seat. You know what I mean? Just sit down and let this play out. I don't know if he should necessarily be, you know, hankering to get back in there. But interesting report today, Brandon, that Gary Kubiak, who has been quite forthcoming for the past couple of weeks, asked every week, one of the first questions he's asked on his Monday or Tuesday press conferences, whenever they hold them over there in Denver, who's going to be your starting quarterback this week? He has been absolutely forthcoming in the previous week saying, oh, it's Brock Osweiler. It's Brock Osweiler. This week, he was given four opportunities to say who it was going to be, and he didn't say. So
yeah,
a lot of people,
I read the same thing.
A lot of people are reading into that is it possible we could see Peyton Manning back in?
Well, they said Peyton Manning was probably going to start practicing soon. So, you know, once Peyton hits the field in practice, he's you know how he is. You know, he don't want to come out of the game if he's hurt. He certainly doesn't want to sit on the sidelines if he's capable of playing. I mean, you know, whether he's playing well or not is irrelevant. He wants to be out there and he wants to try.
I understand.
You got to give him credit for that. But, you know,
I do and I don't.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing that could be good for Peyton. You know, when he was playing, it looked like he had arm strength issues. You know, the ball wasn't getting there with a ton of zip, blah, blah, blah. And this injury, in a roundabout way, could be a good thing for him because it was a foot injury. So his upper body basically got a rest while his foot healed. So there's a good chance here that, you know, Peyton Manning might come back kind of like he did off the bye. Remember, if you remember the first couple weeks after the bye, he did look like he had a little more zip on the ball. And this is an extended bye, essentially, of a few weeks. You know, maybe he comes back and can make a run in the playoffs. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's tough when you're, you know, 39-year-old NFL quarterback who's been through, you know, some of the injuries he's been through. It's that's a tough order. So, you know, this break might have been good for him. Little heel into the bones kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess. I guess where I kind of draw the line a little bit, and I hear what you're saying. I mean, you know, you say, well, you got to give him credit for the fact, you know, he's a gamer. The guy's a gamer.
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Okay, I got it. At the same time, too, you have to be a team player. And I think you have to be honest and you have to be realistic and you have to say, what's best for the team? My team is 10-3. My team is 10-3, and potentially we could get into the playoffs. What's the best thing for my team? Am I the best thing for my team? And the way that Peyton Manning was playing prior to his exit, Brandon, he was not the best thing for that team. You know it and I know it. And he had to have known it a little bit in the back of his own mind. That's my own thinking. I hear what you're saying. He's a gamer, but I think sometimes, too, he's very, very egotistical and a bit selfish. I don't know if he's always a team player, and that's what bothers me about it a little bit. As we
All right,
get
well,
this,
here, I got a question
go
for you. I got a
yep.
question for you. You're a Broncos fan, at least a fringe Broncos fan. What would you rather have going into the playoffs? A guy who started three or four NFL games – and looked okay, not world beater. Definitely saw some flaws against Oakland in Brock Osweiler, or a guy who has the experience of Peyton Manning. Now, I realize when Peyton is bad, he can really stink up the joint. But at the same time, he does have the experience of dealing with playoffs, you know, and, you know, the physical thing, yeah, okay, Brock Osweiler is going to win hands down physically. But, you know, mentally and experience-wise, I don't know. I think you got to give – as much as I'm not a Peyton fan, you got to give him credit for what he's done. And I think that adds value in you know, the way they were winning the early games. Yeah, you know what I mean? They were winning the game, you know, with the running game. And Peyton did just enough to get, you know, the game won. And they relied heavily on their defense, which I think their defense is starting to maybe get a little gassed, you know, later in the season. Maybe they need to figure out a way to, you know, rotate some more people in and out kind of thing. But, you know, I don't know. I don't know that it's a hands down yes or no of which quarterback's better or worse for the team. I think they both bring different things to the table.
I hear what you're saying. If the question is which one would I want, do I want the experience of a Peyton Manning, or do I want a guy that's looked, as you put it, okay? Let me just throw some numbers at you for a minute. Brock Osweiler, in my opinion, the game against the Raiders really was the first of the games where I would have to say that he was really basically ineffective. I mean, I think all the way around he was ineffective. But so far, Brock Osweiler's numbers in the short sample that we've got for this season versus Peyton Manning, Brock Osweiler is throwing at a 63.5 completion rate. Peyton Manning, 59.9. Brock Osweiler has thrown for 5 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. Peyton Manning threw for 9 touchdowns and 17 interceptions. Which one do I want? Boy, I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know. Does experience count for that much?
When you're talking about those comparisons? Well, factor in these last few weeks. Factor in the rest, too, from these last couple weeks. Peyton's shown when he gets a little rest later in his career that he can come back, you know, a little crisper.
Well, I guess I guess maybe if we're going to find out, I think perhaps maybe the thing that the Broncos would want to perhaps maybe try to do, if you're going to get him in there for the playoffs, let's try him out in a game or two before then.
So yeah, I agree. I don't think this week's the week to do it. I mean, you know, we still have, what, 3 more games, 4 more games?
3
more games? 3. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you give him one more. Maybe bring him back for that big game against the Bengals, because the Bengals are going to be, you know, dinged up in theory with, you know, not having Dalton in there. Maybe that's the time, build a little confidence, have him come out that last game, play a little bit if it matters. If it doesn't matter, then maybe you give him half the game off. Keep him fresh. You know, depends where you get, where you're going to end up seated. You're going to be the 3 seed, you're going to be the 2 seed. You know, that kind of stuff. I think all that stuff factors into how much you see Peyton Manning play. If the Broncos are prepared for him to be the playoff quarterback. In other words, if Kubiak is being straight and saying as soon as he's healthy, he's coming back and he's our guy, if that's true and not just coach speak, as they say, well, then I think you're right. We do need to see him, but maybe not full time. You know what I mean? And definitely not necessarily this week. I'd wait a week. Like you said, that's 2. And if the last game doesn't matter a whole lot in anything, then maybe he only plays the first half. You know, that's just kind of the way I'd look at it.
You brought up the Colts. Let me jump over to that mess for a minute here. Because I'm just looking at that right now. I'm just looking at that situation. And, you know, I've been the one that has said now for, I guess, the better part of 2 weeks now, the Colts will not make the playoffs. And I'm going to be curious to see whether I get at least one thing right this season. Because God knows I haven't been right about a whole hell of a lot recently. I'm also looking at in the AFC also the wild card situation. You know, in the wild card hunt right now, you got the Jets, you got the Pittsburgh Steelers, you got the Kansas City Chiefs. Brandon, with the Chiefs on a 7-game run now, 7 games in a row that they've won. Previously, this team was 1-5. They're now 8-5. Solidly got themselves into playoff contention. It would seem to me you'd have to give the nod for the wild card of the three to the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Kansas City Chiefs. Or do you throw the Jets? Obviously, the Jets are in the conversation. But who do you more heavily favor? It seems to me the Steelers and the Chiefs, wouldn't it?
Yes. Yes. And I'll be perfectly honest with you. The Bengals better find a way to not be the Cowboys when their starting quarterback goes down, because Pittsburgh's really only 2 games behind them with 3 to go. If they decide to, you know, be the Cowboys and can't play without, you know, Dalton, mm-hmm. you know, they could be seriously, Pittsburgh could be right knocking at the door in the division. So Pittsburgh has a lot to play for right now, in my opinion.
Okay. Right?
They just, if I'm Pittsburgh, if I'm that coach out in Pittsburgh, I'm telling them, just take care of this week. We'll take it week to week. We win. We go on to the next week. You know, let's keep going here, you know, and see how this ends up. They could end up with the third seed, depending how things play out. I mean, clearly the fourth seed is going to be the AFC South, so we can just cross that off the board. The only thing that's in question is 1, 2, and 3, who the players are and what order are they in. And right now it looks like it's the Bengals and the Broncos and the Patriots. But, mm-hmm. you know, with the Bengals losing their starting quarterback, yeah, got to ask the question at least.
Now, looking at that other potential wildcard team in the Jets, Todd Bowles being a brand new coach up there in New York. I don't know about you. I'm somewhat surprised that the Jets are an 8-5 team. I'm going to be honest with you.
Well, yeah, a little bit. I'll be honest with you. I think they're better with Fitzpatrick than they were with Geno Smith. I think that's probably led to, you know, them winning more games than anybody thought, honestly. I still don't think they're a good team. I still think the Jets are, you know, they have to play New England in one of their, I think it's the second to last game is against the Patriots. I think New England beats them. I think the Patriots are now primed, you know, to make that late season push. I mean, they're going to start getting some of their players back, short of a Garrett Blunt. And I think it's, you know, if they can do anything with Monte Ball, you know, the Jets, you know, they got to win the other 2 games they have left, because, you know, I just think New England's going to be getting close to being back on all 8 cylinders by the second to last week. We could see Edelman back in the lineup. You know, we could see McCourty getting healthy from that ankle injury he just had. The defense is already getting guys back now. So, you know, things are, as long as there's no more big serious injuries moving forward for the Patriots, they're looking good. So the Jets, they got to take care of the other 2 games, in my opinion, if they mm-hmm. want to have a shot anyway. And Kansas City, like you have pointed out, I think they just looks more of a solid team right now. They're on a roll, and we've seen teams do this before. You get that momentum going, you know, sometimes it's hard to slow them down.
Yep.
And you know, Andy Reid certainly got them believing something. Because, you know, Jamal Charles has been out, and then all of a sudden they start winning. It's like, okay, you lose your best player, and now we're going to go on a winning streak. How does that work out? You know? I mean, seriously, I mean, Jamal Charles is, you know, one of the most prized possessions in fantasy football because of the numbers he puts up. And, you know, he goes down season-ending injury, and then they put up 7 in a row. So that's, you know, I think you got to give that a little definitely not overlook, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
And plus you got, you know, the Oakland Raiders, they're kind of on the fringe. I mean, they just beat the Broncos. I don't think their record's good enough to, you know, there'd have to be some some catastrophic failures above them.
Yeah.
But they didn't look bad playing against the Broncos. That team is certainly improved. That's for sure. They're heading in the right direction, you know, for going forward, I think.
There's no doubt about that. There is absolutely no doubt about that. I couldn't agree with you more. I really believe that, you know, well, you know, we kind of thought that we were going to see a lot more, I think, of a deterioration of the Denver Broncos this season than we have actually seen. I'm somewhat surprised by that, but I think you alluded to it before. What really has propped the Denver Broncos up has been their defense almost from week one right through. So we haven't seen quite the diminution of the Denver Broncos that I think a lot of people kind of thought we were going to see. But the Oakland Raiders, in my opinion, are going to be the team in the next season or two that is going to be absolutely poised to be taking over this division. That's my gut feeling on it. Now, again, I kind of put it off. I referenced it and then I put it off because I just didn't want to deal with it, and that's the mess in the AFC South. The Colts, Brandon, I don't know what to say. My God, they had 51 points put on them by the Jaguars last week. And you're saying Matt Hasselbeck is hobbling around with a sling
on his left arm.
What in the world are the Colts going to do? We heard in a press conference, I guess in his weekly post game sort of, it wasn't post game, but I guess it was the next day press conference from Chuck Pagano. He's waxing nostalgia about how he's been in far worse places than this, but he's talking philosophically about his own personal demise. Because the reporters apparently are asking him, you know, well, how you holding up there, coach? Things aren't looking too good for you, and are you going to be here next year? And, you know, how do you feel about that? And, you know, he's waxing nostalgic with the reporters and going on about, you know, how he spent 26 days in the hospital thinking he was going to die. So
yeah, well, he's probably trying to spin it. I mean, they're asking him all the questions, you know, when's Andrew Luck going to be ready? You know, what's the status with Hasselbeck? You know, Charlie Whitehurst, can he take you? I mean, those are the kind of stuff. I mean, maybe he's just trying to distract all that, you know, and his future and just, you know, coach speak, as I was saying earlier, possibly. I mean, from what I'm reading, Andrew Luck's still a week or two away from recovering from the ruptured spleen that he gets clearance to play. Hasselbeck, they said, was a rib injury after the game, yet now his arm's in a sling, so that leads you to believe it's more involved. The NFL doesn't make them report on injuries till Wednesday. So, you know, we'll find out tomorrow what they list Hasselbeck's injury as, but even that, there's no guarantee. We all know how they all play games with the injury report. I would think, you know, with the sling, it's probably some kind of shoulder issue. Hopefully it's not a, you know, like a broken collarbone, as we've seen like Tony Romo go through and stuff like that. But it could just be a, you know, like a slight separation, and being his left, you know, non-throwing hand, maybe he can play. He's kind of going through a lot of what Peyton does though. And being, you know, the 39-40 year old quarterback, you don't heal as fast.
Right.
You know, at that age, I can tell you that from my own, you know, we all can as we get older. It takes you a lot longer to recover from stuff than it used to. So, you know, imagine the grind of a 40-year-old NFL player getting beat around behind a bad offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Hasselbeck's probably really sore come Monday. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, all right, so we've got three games remaining for the Colts, and we're not quite sure, or do we know? I don't know. I haven't actually read. Do we know who the starting quarterback is going to be for Sunday?
Nothing's been announced yet, but everybody's, you know, kind of taking a wait and see. Let's see, you know, how everybody, you know, comes out of it. But if you had a guess, I'm thinking Charlie Whitehurst right now from everything I'm hearing.
Look at here. Who are the Colts going to play this week? They're going to play at home, they're going to play the Texans.
Yep.
So we've got the Colts schedule for the remainder. The Colts schedule for the remainder. Do I want to make sure I got the Colts here? Yeah, I have the Colts here and not the Texans. The schedule here for the remainder of the season for the Colts. They are home this week to the Texans. They go on the road to the Dolphins. And then their last week, they host the Tennessee Titans. if you know who the quarterback is, you might be able to call the game. At least a couple of those games. But without knowing, it's difficult to say. Now, over on the Texans side of it, you've got, as I just pointed out, the Texans are at Indianapolis this weekend. Then they're at the Tennessee Titans. And then their final game is they host the Jaguars.
I think I like the Colts schedule a little better there.
Really?
The Jaguars have been looking good lately. They both play Tennessee. So that leaves the Dolphins. And who's the other game the Texans have?
The Texans, Dolphins, and the Titans.
For the Colts. Okay.
Yep.
So
they play each other. They play each other. Then they have the Dolphins, and then they have the Titans. Right.
So they both play the Titans. The only difference is Jacksonville and Miami.
Correct.
You know what? After watching that disgrace in Miami last night, I'm even more convinced they're not a good team. I mean, Jacksonville put up 51 points against the Colts the other week. They're definitely clicking on offense. I'm not saying they're going to do that against the Texans, but I don't know. I kind of like the Colts schedule better anyway. Of those two teams, I'd rather play, because Jacksonville's a division rival for the Texans and Colts. So, the Dolphins is just a conference game. They're not a rival. Mm-hmm. For either one of them. So I don't know. I kind of like the Colts schedule better anyway. I don't know that, I don't know if that means they're going to, right now, I think it's too close to call. I kind of lean towards you that your way of thinking. I think the Texans, their defense is better. I think they have a better team, playing, not even worrying about who's playing quarterback. I think the team, overall team is better. Right now in Houston than in Indianapolis.
Yep. Well, there's no doubt about it that let's get this one straight. This division is going to be decided, Brandon, this weekend.
Maybe not. I mean, possibly. It depends how the other tiebreakers work out, though, too. Because haven't they played once already? And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the Colts did beat the Texans the first time.
Colts beat the Texans on October 8, 27-20.
Right. So now if the Texans win, that's head-to-head's a tie. Then you got to go to other division games.
I'll tell you what we're not taking into account here. We're not taking Jacksonville into account. Jacksonville is only a game behind both of them.
Yeah, that's true.
That's totally true. We just
and they play
out.
One of them.
They play both of them. They play both
no,
of them.
No, just the one.
No,
just the one.
One.
They just
okay,
beat
yeah.
the Colts.
Yeah,
they just
right,
finished
okay.
up with the Colts.
Yeah. So we're not taking that into account at this point. So, well, yeah. Interesting. Okay. Yeah.
They're not going to pick up a game on both of them this week because they both, the other two play each other. So...
Right.
Knowing that if I'm Jacksonville, knowing I have to play the Texans yet, I'm rooting for the Texans to win this week. Then I'm going to beat them the following week and see how things play out. That's kind of the way you got to look at it.
Jacksonville is hosting the absolutely floundering and faltering Atlanta Falcons this week in Jacksonville. Jacksonville is a 3.5-point favorite. And Atlanta, as we just pointed out before, has now lost 6 in a row. And they look absolutely horrible. The Houston-Indianapolis game, Brandon, is completely offline. The Vegas has taken it off completely.
Well, that's what they don't know who's playing quarterback for
exactly.
either side.
I was going to say, until, until they get word on what the hell's going on in this game, that this game is lost. So we have no way of being able to even look at a point spread on this game. We have no way of knowing. So very, very interesting. You know, the more and more that I look at it and think about it, the more and more I'm saying, you know what? The AFC South is really almost identical to the NFC East right now. Well, having said that, let's run over real quick. We'll take a look at the NFC East because we got three teams all tied at the top. The Redskins, the Eagles, and the Giants all are tied for first place with a 6-7 record. Washington holds the tiebreaker lead on the division. And then that's followed by the Eagles and then followed by the Giants. And before we get into that little bit of a conversation, if anybody wants to jump in with us, I'll give you the number. It's 347. It's 826-9964. 347-826-9964. Otherwise, you can, if you're listening on a computer, you can leave us a message in the chat room right there at Blog Talk Radio on our show page. If you scroll down near the bottom, you'll find the chat room. You can leave a message for us there. I'd be more than happy to bring your comment. Or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike. That's how you can get a hold of me on Twitter, at Frat House Mike. And by the way, I'm putting out our Frat House Sports NFL poll for this week, poll question for this week for our Red Zone Blitz program. And the poll question, which I'm sending out right now, reads, which team wins the NFC East, Redskins, Eagles, or Giants? And you can vote on that by simply going to at Frat House Mike. You can find the poll right there, and you can participate in that right at Twitter. All right, now let me do this real quick because I know that the Eagles have got the Cardinals this week. Let me get up the other two schedules here real fast. The Washington is hosting Buffalo this week, and that Buffalo game, as I pointed out, the Eagles won last week, 23-20. I really believe. I don't know if that game really was as close. I don't know, Brandon. It's kind of difficult for me because I was sitting on the edge of my seat with it, and it was, I was not very happy with many things that got played in that game. But when you go back and take a look at it, I don't know if the game was as close, really, as the score. It seemed to me that Philadelphia played better. Let's put it that way. I thought they played better than Buffalo. I think the defense had some lapses and gave up a score or two here or there real quick to Buffalo that allowed Buffalo to hang around and get back into the game. But I kind of thought that Philadelphia played a better game in that one than Buffalo did. I don't know. You saw the game as well. What did you think?
Yeah, I never got the sense that the Eagles were going to lose. They seemed to be in control. Buffalo scored some points late as the Eagles were in clock kill mode. So, you know, I thought the Eagles played pretty good. Bradford looked good, threw some nice passes, deeper passes. I never had the impression or the feeling that the Eagles were in danger of losing the game. They felt in control. I'm not necessarily jumping up and down about their chances this week playing Arizona. And that's going to be that's a tall order for anybody.
Yeah.
And I mean anybody in the NFL. That's a solid team on both sides of the ball. The Eagles had the work cut out for them this week. The Redskins, the Giants, you know, the Eagles pick them. I mean, none of them are particularly standing out to me as a good team and distinguishing themselves from the other. I mean, the Giants won last night against a bad Dolphins team, but the Giants kind of, you know, they still made their mistakes. So, you know, I think that's just the problem. I think that NFC doesn't have a good, solid team without a healthy Cowboys. I think if Tony Romo would not have gotten injured and re-injured, I think Dallas would be out in front of this and we wouldn't even be having this conversation.
I agree.
But, you know, that's not the case. So the other three get to fight it out at this point.
Yep. couldn't agree with you more. That this is all the, I mean, everybody's kind of the beneficiary or the at the benefit of the fact that the Cowboys are not in the mix. That's what it's all about. Let's see the Eagles' remaining schedule. We got the Cardinals this week, as you just point out. That's followed by the Redskins next week. That game's at home, so two home games. We actually have three home games in a row. We had the Bills last week, and then the Cardinals, and then the Redskins, and then the Eagles will close out the season on the road versus the Giants. So
that game could very well be for the East right there.
You're not kidding. So that's their schedule. Now you go to the Redskins. As I pointed out, the Redskins will be hosting the Bills at home this week. Then they go to the Eagles, and they close out the season against the Cowboys. The Giants.
Yeah.
I know. The Giants this week. Oh, get this one. The Giants are home hosting the Panthers. Then they go on the road to the Vikings. And then they close out the season with the Eagles. Oh, man alive. The Giants remaining three. Forget it. The Giants remaining three. All three teams are playoff teams. The Panthers. The Panthers aren't going to be sitting anybody just yet. So, they're. I mean, had they had the Panthers in the last week of the season, well, the Panthers then are probably sitting a whole bunch of their starters. But the Panthers, they're playing the Panthers this week. So the Panthers are. That's a win for the Panthers. Then they're going to be going up to Minnesota to play Minnesota, who still could be in a fight with the Green Bay. For the North division, they're still, you know, Minnesota's only one game behind them. And then they're going to close out with the Eagles, who, of course, is going to be, by that point, possible. It's possible the division could be determined. Believe it or not. There are scenarios that potentially could have the Eagles well, winning the division.
Or losing. I mean, if the Eagles lose to the Cardinals this week, they play the Redskins next week. If the Redskins find a way to win that game, the Redskins could be in control of everything. So, you know, it could go any one of these three if they decide to go on a winning streak and the others decide to lose all of a sudden. I mean, I'll tell you what. Of all the schedules, I like the Eagles the least. I don't like the Cardinals game. And then they got two division games, you know. Yes, the other guys have division games as well, but they don't have to play the Cardinals. I mean, the Redskins playing the Bills this week. I mean, we saw what the Eagles did. The Eagles pretty much controlled that game, you know, against the Bills. So you got to think the Redskins are, you know, kind of at least capable of doing the same thing. So, you know, if I'm an Eagles fan, I'm worried right now just because of that Cardinals game. I just don't see a way the Eagles beat the Cardinals. I mean, really, I just the Cardinals have been playing on all eight cylinders the last few weeks, and the last thing the Eagles need is a good team like that. You know what I mean?
It was pointed out today, though. Consider for a moment, and look, as you just pointed out. I mean, this is why we play the game. We could sit here and talk about all the what ifs we want right now, because it's Tuesday and it's safe to do that. It may not go any way at all the way that we're discussing it, but it's very, very possible. The Eagles have the Cardinals. The Redskins have the Bills. The Giants have the Panthers. It's possible that all three teams could lose this week. And we're right where we're, you know, a week from now, we're sitting in the exact same situation we are right now. All of the teams sitting at 6-8. And then what's left? Well, then what's left is you're looking at two games remaining, of which then at that point the Eagles are hosting the Redskins and the Giants are going up to Minnesota. And you're telling me you like the Eagles' schedule the least I like the Giants' schedule the least. I think the Giants.
Yeah, but we've seen Minnesota be very vulnerable. You know, they're hit or miss a lot, at least these last few weeks. I mean, 1 week they come out looking great, like they're going to, you know, take over the North and, you know, beat the Packers. Then they come out and lose a couple games, and the Packers are back in control.
Yeah.
So, I don't see the same fluctuations from the Cardinals that I do from the Vikings. So, you know, if I'm I think that the Giants, the way they are, as fluky as they are and as fluky as the Vikings are, the Giants could conceivably go up to Minnesota and come out of there with a win, where I find it unlikely that the Eagles can do the same with the Cardinals. So I guess that's where I see the difference.
Gotcha. Okay. All right.
I mean,
good.
It's a toss-up. I mean, we're talking about three bad teams.
Yeah,
trying
no,
to win a division. So, I mean, I don't think anybody would agree that or would argue with us that these teams are, you know, subpar at best,
if you know what I mean. I accept that. I got you. I got where you're going on that one. I accept that. I just I kind of think that in looking at it, yeah, I would agree with you. You know, if there's an unlikely win on this board anywhere for any of these teams, it's the Eagles beating the Cardinals this week. What do you think the line is on the Cardinals Eagles game?
Where is it being played?
In Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia, I still think Arizona should be a 6 or 7 point favorite.
Okay, so if I tell you that it's 3, 3.5, depending on the book, would that make you think that maybe there are some people that think that the Eagles might have a shot at this?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. That sounds like a pretty weak line to me.
Yep.
You know, the Eagles are at home, so you're saying on neutral field, you know, that it's a 6 point game? I don't know about that. And I don't think the Eagles don't play well at home, at least not this year. They put up some real stinkers at home in front of the fans. Some of their better games have been on the road, so I don't get that line a little bit. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, it's not like – I mean, the Cardinals still got to play. It's not like they can, you know, just cruise. I mean, they're still playing for seeding. I mean, clearly they're not going to catch the Panthers, but they don't want to let, you know, Green Bay sneak in there and get that 2 away from them.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, I don't know. I don't quite understand that line. I'll be honest with you. That seems a little short in the point spread there to the Cardinals.
Yeah, and you know, one of you know what's interesting too is that in the past 48 hours, it hasn't moved. It's been 3, 3.5. It hasn't moved. Now that versus, you know, some of your other standard games, all right? Give you an example. Tennessee at New England. What do you think the line is on that one?
Tennessee at New England? That's probably double digits. You're probably looking at 10, 11.
14 for New England. Cleveland Browns at Seattle.
That's probably 8 or 9.
18.5 for Seattle.
Oof.
So,
wow.
You're at least somewhat in the ballpark. So when you would say Arizona at Philly, you're saying, okay, that should probably be 6, 7 points. No, it's 3, 3.5. Yep. No.
Now that one don't make much sense to me. I'll be honest with you.
Yep.
You got an 11-2 team going up against a, you know, a 6 and 7. Flaky team. I don't know about that one. I mean, especially if you're going to give, you know, Seattle Seahawks, who are 8-5, 14.5 points against the Browns, who are actually playing better at 3 and 10. I don't know. I mean, yeah, I guess if the game was at Arizona, we'd see a more commensurate line, I guess, with these other games that you brought up. But I still think it's a weak. I think it's a little weak in the points. I'll be honest.
I would agree with you.
I mean, it sounds like they're trying to direct money, you know, towards the one side or the other.
I would agree with you.
I don't even know which one that would be more inclined to make me bet on if I was betting a game, you know? I think I'd probably be more inclined to bet on the Cardinals with that low of a point line. You're only giving up 3.5.
Agreed.
I don't know.
Agreed. I'd be inclined to bet Arizona because of the spread. You know, I stay away from games. If I were to bet, I'd be staying away from games that have a point spread, you know, higher than, in most cases, higher than 7. I'm not going near a game like that. I'm not betting on a game like that. But 3.5, I'm going, well, come on. That's a no-brainer. That's Arizona's game all the way. You know, Arizona's going to beat that, no problem. So, I would agree with you. I would agree with you. And you would think as the money, if money's coming in on Arizona, that would force the line up. But the line hasn't moved. So, yeah. I don't know.
That's a head-scratcher. You know, I think that's the column that's got to go in is a head-scratcher right now.
All right, before we get into jumping in, taking a look at a couple of games here from this past week, and we'll break them down, you know, stat-wise and things like that. You just brought up Cleveland, and you said Cleveland, they've been playing a little bit better. Well, listen, we went back to Manziel this week, and Cleveland won that game. Let's see, do I have the, I have the score right here, 24-10. It seems to me Cleveland is better, at least right now. And I'm not saying, don't get me wrong. I don't want anybody to read into this that, hey, I think Johnny Manziel is the best thing. But, Brandon, it would seem to me Johnny Manziel is Cleveland's best option right now. Yes or no?
Oh, without a doubt. I think he's playing well. I don't think that his benching had anything to do with his play on the field. It had to do with his off-field indiscretions and then subsequent lying about it to the coach. I think he is clearly the most logical choice right now to be out there. I mean, Josh McCown, he's a gamer, but dude can't stay healthy. I mean, he's had his bell rung how many times?
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to see if you're the Browns organization, you got to see what Manziel can give you because you got some tough decisions to make. You know, moving forward, you know, we drafted another quarterback, we bailing on Manziel. You know, do we think he's going to eventually get it? You know, which way do you want to go with it? I mean, you got to answer some of these questions, and there's nothing better than having him finish out the season and seeing what you got at least.
Yeah, I you know, I agree, and I just think that I don't know if the kid's ever going to be a franchise quarterback.
No, I don't think so either. I'm right with you on that.
I'd be inclined to say he won't be. I'm inclined to say he won't be. But I think that for the moment, I think that he gives Cleveland, at least with their current setup, their best opportunity, best chance of winning. Of all of the options that Mike Pettine's got available to him up there.
I agree.
Now, you know, whether in fact they're going to be hunting for a quarterback again, we talked a little bit about that last Thursday night, about how many is it now? 24, 25, 25 quarterbacks in the last 15 years, something to that effect, 25 starting quarterbacks. So, you know, are they going to be looking for a starting quarterback again? And,
well, you know, they wanted Bradford, and Bradford's a free agent. It doesn't take much math to connect those dots.
It was interesting because one of the conversations, there were conversations today on one of the sports talk programs I was listening to, breaking down some of the, and you know, I've been saying it now for a while. This draft class, if you really are looking for, forget it for quarterbacks. Or running backs, in my opinion. If you're looking for a running back or quarterbacks in this draft class, forget it. You're not going to find one. But of the quarterbacks that will be available, oh, my God, they were breaking it down. There's only like four or five that are worth anything at all. And in any other year, Brandon, they're probably not first rounders. They
right.
might go. They might go first round this year because it's the best of what's available. But in any other year, they would not be. Excuse me. They would not be first rounders. But it'll be interesting to see whether, in fact, Cleveland is going to be in the market. We'll get talking about that too as we move forward. You know, which
my guess is they're not in the drafting a quarterback market. That's just my guess. I think they'd be sooner inclined to see, you know, one more year with Manziel or like a Sam Bradford kind of move.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's I just don't see Cleveland investing another draft pick. They got so many other holes, especially on the defensive side of the ball. You know, if they could ever get what's his name, Josh Gordon, their one talented receiver, to stop getting suspended.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they actually have something on offense. They have a flash of, you know, being able to put up 30, 40 points now, you know, as it is. Add Josh Gordon back to the mix. That offense all of a sudden is getting very potent. Defense is where they need to draft. They need to focus on building that side of the ball.
I agree.
If they want to be a good team.
I agree with you. I could see us, so on our end of season roundtable program, which will be coming up in January, I could see us getting into the whole conversation about, you know, which NFL franchises will be in the market for a quarterback.
Yeah, that'd be a good topic, actually.
I could see that whole conversation coming up. Which ones will, in fact, be in the market? And that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be drafting. It could mean somebody might be looking, you know, free agency. Because, look, RG3 is going to be available. Colin Kaepernick's going to be available. You know, there are others that are actually going to be available out there. You know, who knows? Maybe Matt Hasselbeck could be available.
I don't think anybody would want to have Hasselbeck as a starter, though. No offense to Hasselbeck.
I hear that the Jets are planning on signing Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's the word.
Well, that's good.
Yep.
Good for them. Let's get some continuity for a change. That's probably the best decision they've made in a long time.
We got a call here, Brandon. We got a call here from the Atlanta, Georgia region. I'm wondering whether this is our friend down there in Atlanta.
Nosh.
So
is that Nosh?
Let's get him on the line. How we doing, man? How are you? I appreciate you calling tonight. What's on your mind?
No question. Doing well, man. Doing well. How you guys doing?
Real good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wanted to weigh in. I came in the middle of the Cleveland conversation.
Yep.
So I wanted to weigh in on that, man. And just looking from the outside, Mike Pettine, Pettine, whatever the name is, he's got to go. The ownership obviously likes Manziel. They made, you know, some questionable moves to get him as far as taking him as high as they did when I think Bridgewater was still on the board. And then you come out and you don't play Manziel. Now, I know Josh McDowell's a better player than he is right now, but you know what Josh McDowell is. So there was no reason to start the season off with him as your starter. You start Manziel, let him fall on his face or prosper, and then you know what you have. By playing it the way he did, now they're going to rush Manziel on the field for this last, you know, these last couple games and get a small sample size on whether the kid can play or not. And honestly, they won't know. So now you go into the offseason still wondering about Manziel, and you probably have to keep him on the roster, and you might be doing a move like the Chargers years back. Remember when Drew Brees was struggling and they drafted Phillip Rivers, and then all of a sudden the light turned on for Drew Brees and
right.
Phillip couldn't get the job from him? You might end up in a situation like that. So, I mean, the rookie wage scale kind of makes it, you know, a little more doable now, but still – if they had just played him at the beginning of the season, they could really know what they have. And by this little, you know, the tension between him and the coach, obviously that's not his guy. And to sit him over line, I think the call came from up top for him to get that starting job back. Because I don't think Pettine wanted to bring him back in there, especially after publicly sitting him the way that he did for lying to him. So I think they were forcing his hand because he's on his way out. But, yeah, that Cleveland, this is a disaster. They got a lot of work to do.
Oh, yeah.
As somebody just said, the great Josh Gordon, the alcohol and the other troubles that Josh has, more than likely by the time he gets sober and like really ready, it'll probably be past his prime and too late. I mean, you got to kind of think of him as, you know what I mean? I mean, it's a rough thing to say, but, you know, he has deep, deep issues, man, and football's probably not the best thing for him to be doing right now.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's an interesting observation, Nash, and one, Brandon, you might remember that I brought up with when we had on Fred Gretham from up there at, you know, the Cleveland Browns media. But I had kind of made the same analogy that, you know, is it possible that Jimmy Haslam is kind of like Dan Snyder to Johnny Manziel? You know, we know that Snyder had this firm, tough relationship with RG3 that kind of messed up the relationship between Shanahan and then I think for a little while now with Gruden and how he was managing that team. Now, I think Snyder has backed off a bit, obviously, because we're not, obviously, RG3 is not part of the equation down there now. But I'm wondering whether you've got a similar situation, that, in fact, the Haslam factor is kind of like that of Snyder. Fred Gretham didn't seem to think that there really was any kind of necessary love, you know, really anywhere inside the Browns organization for Manziel. That was then. They did what they did when they did it, but that many of them might now be rethinking it. I don't know. Any thoughts on it, Brandon?
Oh, I think Nash has some very good points. I think there is a disconnect between Pettine and the upper management, be it the GM, be it the owner, you know, be it, you know, somewhere. And he might be onto something. Pettine may be on. Well, we've talked about him being on the hot seat, you know, mm-hmm. and you know, I don't know if it comes right down to a Pettine or Manziel, you know, him or me equation, you know, because as Nash pointed out, we're not necessarily sure where we are with Manziel at this point. But, you know, I think there's a clear disconnect somewhere between the Browns organization and the head coach. So, you know, I think he might be onto something there, that it might be time for yet another regime change in Cleveland.
Oh, man, what a mess. What a
I know.
Mess. It is just – I don't know how the fans
are there. I want to add real
with...
quick. I think the coach, Pettine, I think you can kind of compare him to John Gruden in Washington, because they both took the same gamble. Ownership is in love with this certain quarterback because this quarterback has a chance to be a superstar if they're good and raise a lot of money for that owner. I'm going against the grain, so I have to win. So Gruden took the gamble, and he's lucky to be in a bad NFC East to where they could make the playoffs with him making that choice, and then Snyder has to keep him around. Pettine, it seemed, trying to do the same thing, but as you said, the guy kept getting beat up, and, you know, by then, you know, the season kind of went down, so there's really nothing for him to stand on at the end of the season. Like, he can't walk into that meeting with Haslam with something to really slap down on the desk the way Gruden can this year, the way he can say, look, we're not the best, but I got the most out of Kirk, and I proved that he's better in my system than RG3 was. So you have to kind of extend Gruden in Washington. But Pettine,
good.
I think I...
Excellent point. Hey, Nas, you're down there in the Atlanta, Georgia area. Let me ask you a question. Are you a Falcons fan?
A little bit. I'm a transplant, so
Okay. What's the feeling like from the fan base down there about their Dirty Birds? They must not be too happy. What are they on, a 6-game losing streak right now?
Oh yeah. This is the first year I've seen people actually come for Matt Ryan. He's getting a lot of the hate this year, and honestly, it's not all of his fault because that roster is really depleted. And he's not a franchise quarterback to where you can just put him out there with anything. He has to have a solid line, solid receiving core, and a good running game for him to be an all-pro guy. And so since he doesn't have that, you know, he's really struggling. But I wouldn't really blame it all on Matt. The real troubles with Atlanta start with the GM, Dimitroff. He hasn't drafted well. The O-line and D-line need to be retooled. I don't think a lot of guys will be coming back next year. Dan Quinn just, you know, he has a lot of guys on one-year deals, prove-it deals, basically, and I think next year they'll be out of here. But, you know, things are looking bright for the future, though, because they have a lot to build on, just having Matt and Julio as your starting pieces as you start to try to rebuild with Devontae Freeman as well. But the Mitchell off his 2012 draft class, not a single player on the roster right now.
Mm-hmm. There have been rumors, at least up here in our neck of the woods, and we're up here in Pennsylvania, there have been rumors around here that perhaps maybe Dan Quinn's already lost the locker room down there. There's no chance that he would get fired after just one season, is there?
No. He knew he was coming into a project that had to be changed. So, I mean, if he did lose the locker room, there's a lot of guys in that locker room who he didn't want in there anyway. Guys who aren't that good and guys who were just cheap enough to make the roster. So the guys who really matter in that locker room, the defenders who they're going to keep, meaning the corner and Trufant, and like I said, the running back and Matt Ryan and Julio, I think they're on board with it. But Roddy White and some of these other older guys, I doubt they'll be around next year.
Mm-hmm.
I think Roddy White's done.
He's just
age. The Falcons released Hankerson from IR today, which means he's a free agent, which is kind of surprising because he actually was the more or less the guy who ousted Roddy White, you know, in the beginning of the year. And he was on the designated to return designation of IR. And now they're going to just flat out release him. You know, that's not saying much. I don't, their receiving core short of Julio Jones is kind of weak. I don't quite understand some of the moves they're making. They're still, you know, they still got a few games left in this season.
Yeah.
Yeah, but well, Hankerson came with a lot of baggage. And, you know, he kind of showed up because he, at this point, it looks like Roddy can't get separation. So Hankerson was kind of thrust into the lineup. But then he started getting hurt, had a lot of drops, and there's just rumors that he's just not a guy that's easy to get along with, and his talent doesn't really match that kind of attitude. So, you know.
Nah, he was always a kind of a bit role player in Washington, so he never really, you know, got a starting job there either. So that kind of makes sense. We'll see if anybody actually picks him up for the stretch run. I mean, he's not a bad, you know, third, fourth receiver. I don't think he's a solid two, but I think he could be on a playoff team. He could be a nice fourth guy in the lineup.
Mm-hmm. Brandon, just out of curiosity, you because I know you've got your ear to the ground. Have you read anything or heard anything? And I got to be honest with you, it's not that I've read it because I have not read it, but there were rumblings of it. I had heard it was actually discussed that possibly the Atlanta Falcons, that they weren't responding to Dan Quinn. Have you read anything to that effect in any of your followings, perhaps over on PFT or other places?
No, I have not. Actually, I have not even heard that up until you brought it up. So
okay.
I can't add anything to that. I could imagine, considering they started so well and now they've gone so far down, you know, there's probably some discord in the locker room. I would got to think that.
But that would not, that's not Arthur Blank's modus operandi to fire after one season, is it?
No, he's pretty patient. He kept Mike Smith probably a year or two too long.
Too long.
You know, down
long,
there.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So, you know, he tends to want to try to get some consistency. I think Quinn, I don't think he deserves to get, you know, unless he's truly lost the locker room and it's a disaster, which I think we'd see more if that was the case. I think he deserves at least another year.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think Quinn is getting unfairly judged because they started off 5-0 because they played those four games against the NFC East teams, which were bad teams, and then Tennessee, so they got to look a little better than what they were. Then when they started playing, you know, more competent teams, you know, all the flaws were visible. Like, you could clearly see that this is a team in rebuilding mode. A lot of people, like I said, a lot of players won't be there next year. But Quinn has had Matt Ryan's back. He's got Julio's back. So I think he'll be fine.
I'll tell you, though, knowing, and I've had some experience I've had some experience with the Atlanta Falcons fans. As rabid as they can be, I would imagine some of them are ready to slit their throat down there, Naj.
Oh, yeah. The call-in shows are really bad because you're getting people asking to trade Matt Ryan.
Yeah.
You're getting all that kind of stuff going on
now.
So, fan base is hot. And, you know, Arthur's, you know, he's opening that new stadium, so Arthur Blank is not playing right now. So he's trying to put something together as well.
Yep, absolutely.
I think Matt Ryan showed, though, he's a solid guy. He's you know, maybe a notch below Joe Flacco kind of area, but I think he deserves it. You know, I don't think you'd want to get rid of him, is my point.
We have talked about that Atlanta Falcons team, Brandon. You and I have, and others here at Frat House Sports. We have talked about that team for the better part of 5 years, and we always come back to the same exact thing. The biggest missing ingredient is a ground game. And every year they don't address it. If they were to get Matt Ryan, if they were to get him a competent ground game going, it's going to free everything else up. They're going to be a much better offensive team if they were to just do that one thing. But for some reason or another, they just can't seem to wrap their brains around that concept. I don't get it.
Oh, I'll give you the reason. Like, they got a good young back in Deontay Freeman and Tevin Coleman. I mean, Tevin Coleman, the rookie, is showing well, too. But that O-line is just horrible. Matt hasn't thrown them under the bus, which is kind of good for him. He hasn't had a sideline moment where he's complained about protection. He's getting the hell beat out of them every game. And the lanes just aren't there as far as the running game. That Carolina D-line was just stuffing them and throwing them behind the line of scrimmage just about every snap because they're just not good. So Dimitrov's misses in the past couple of drafts are what is hurting them. I mean, just lineman after lineman, bust, early picks too, and they just haven't worked out.
Awesome. All right. Well, I appreciate the input, Naj. Great stuff. Thanks for calling in this evening, and obviously, keep listening, my friend.
All right, Matt. Have a good one.
You too. Thanks.
Thank you.
Let's see. What do
I
we
like
got here?
That
we
guy.
Got...
I like Naj. He's a very, very smart caller. Very intelligent.
Knows his stuff. There's no doubt about that. And well, we didn't even get into it. He says he's a transplant.
Man, we got to find out who he's.
We'll have to take
original team.
Exactly. We'll have to take. Well, see. I'll tell you what. Well, here's what we'll do. If Naj calls in a couple more times, we'll just quietly quiz him on a few other areas, you know, a few other regional teams, and then after a while, we'll see if we can figure it out where he's actually from. You know, that's what we'll do.
Yeah, that'd be a fun little contest.
Open it up to the listeners. Where is Naj actually from? There you go. Well, we'll do that. Kind of like where's Waldo? Where's Naj actually from? We got about 15 minutes remaining here. If anybody else wants to jump in, like Naj said, they're from Atlanta, Georgia. Don't hesitate. We love to get a report on your team and what's going on. And just like we did there with Naj, we were able to get a ground report on the Atlanta Falcons. See, we don't have that benefit up here in the Philadelphia area region from where we're broadcasting from. So if you call in from a different locale, you can give us a ground report on how your fan base might be reacting.
Hey, where's our buddy Richard been? We haven't talked about the Bears in a while.
Richard's been hitting us up on occasion over on our Facebook page. Oh, there you go.
Okay.
Get over to our Facebook page, folks. Frat House Sports. Leave spaces in between. Look for a little purple icon and give us a like. He's been hitting us up over on our Facebook page. Excuse me. There were some articles he's written recently on the Chicago Bears. Of course, they lost last week to the Washington Redskins, as we were just talking about Washington a little bit. But he's been hitting us up there a little bit. We actually haven't heard from Richard from New York in a little while. But I'm sure Richard, I know, is always listening.
Good.
But If you want to jump in and give us a ground report on your team, perhaps maybe the Houston Texans. There would be an interesting one to hear from. 347-826-9964. 347-826-9964. That's how you can get a hold of us here at the studios for the next 15 minutes or so. Otherwise, you can leave a message in the chat room or you can hit me up on Twitter at Frat House Mike. Is how you can get me on Twitter. Okay. I was just checking my notifications real quick. There wasn't anything there. All right. Why don't we do this? Let's see. Of the games from last week, because we might only have time for a couple of these. I think the game that was actually the most interesting, Brandon, was that, you know, we talked a little bit about the Cardinals. Was that Thursday night game? At least this was one of the more compelling games. Arizona got away with, in my opinion, they got away with a 23-20 win over the Minnesota Vikings. If you, and I don't know if you got to see the all the way to the end of the game, because of course it's on Thursday night and it starts to get late and what have you. But the game ended on a fumble by, I think it was Bridgewater. Yeah, Bridgewater was sacked, and then there was a fumble with, I'm trying to remember, I think it was 13 seconds remaining on the clock. And Minnesota was at Arizona's 38-yard line. They were clearly in field goal range and could have tied the game. But that's how it concluded. It was a close one. Arizona got away with one on this. Minnesota, it's very possible. You know, I know how you mentioned before how Minnesota, you know, well, you know, they sometimes they look really good and then they come out and, you know, they lost two in a row like they've done right now. Minnesota could have very easily be right now a 9-4 team. And, you know, I know that's kind of a hackneyed thing sort of thing to say, because so many times you hear people say that and, you know, well, they could be this. They could be, yeah, well, yeah, right. And you know, listen, the Easter Bunny could be Santa Claus too, but that's not the case. It is what it is. Right. Arizona won the game. But, boy, that's how close it was. It was 13 seconds. And it could have been a tie game. It could have gone to overtime. This could have been a Minnesota win. Teddy Bridgewater last week was 25 of 36 for 335 yards. He had one touchdown and a 108 passer rating. Similar numbers, 25 of 35, 310 yards. These are very, very similar numbers. Two touchdowns. Adrian Peterson was about standard for what he's been this year. It seems to me, you know, despite the fact, Brandon, and I get your opinion on that one real quick, despite the fact he leads the league in yards rushed, he's the number one rusher in the entire NFL. Does it feel like or seem like Peterson's dropped off just a tad? Do you get that feeling?
Honestly, the little bit the games I've seen, he actually doesn't look, you know, slowing down. I mean, he looks quick. He looks like he's making good decisions, you know, behind the line. I think there's just certain times, you know, you come up against a team like Arizona who has a solid defense. You know, it's tough to put up the big yards, you know. The NFL is not as much running back oriented as it used to be. So leading the NFL's rushing wise, you know, ain't necessarily what it used to mean.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not, you know.
Yeah,
it's not as prestigious, let's just say.
It's a passing league. Yeah, you're
yes,
right.
Yes, it's turned into that. But I don't see Peterson as having, like, lost a step or fallen off. I mean, I thought, you know, what I've seen, he looks good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the Vikings are a better team with him than without a doubt.
Well, I think we know that from last year.
Yeah.
Now, you know, In my opinion, would it be impossible to replace Peterson? No, It's not impossible to replace. They could replace.
I don't think it's impossible to replace just about anybody in the league, really.
Well, yeah, I probably you're right.
There's only a handful of guys who are head and shoulders above. I mean, you got Rob Gronkowski at tight end. You know, J.J. Watt at defensive line. I mean, Brady's clearly, you know, getting a little older. I mean, he's not. I wouldn't call him unreplaceable at this point. You know, there's not a lot of guys you can say are truly, you know, that good. Maybe Kuechly down there in Carolina.
Yeah, right, exactly. I was going to throw in Aaron Rodgers, but you know.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers. He might fit that.
You know, when you look at that whole situation in Green Bay, how crazy that is. Because prior to Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay fans were probably saying, it's impossible to replace Brett Favre. You can't replace Brett Favre.
I think Aaron Rodgers may end up overall having more rings than Favre. Favre only ended up with one, and Rodgers already has that.
Well, he might end up with more rings, but he won't end up with bigger numbers. Bigger numbers, I think,
probably
than Brett
not.
Favre.
No. Brett Favre, though, had a lot of interceptions. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to come anywhere close to that number. You know, he was called the gunslinger for a reason.
That's true. I think though, when the careers are done, Aaron Rodgers will have looked at the stars more than Brett Favre did. I think Aaron Rodgers may end up holding the record for the NFL in most sacks taken. I have a funny. I don't know. It just seems to me.
You know, that's a theme that's come up quite a bit tonight. Bad offensive lines in the NFL. There's not very many good ones right now, is there?
Well, maybe,
I mean, we talked about Hasselbeck getting beat up by the Colts' bad line. You know, Naj brought up the Falcons' line. Now we're, you know, trashing Green Bay's line. Well, there's not a lot of good offensive lines out there.
The New York Giants' offensive line is horrible. There's a number of teams. You could go right down the line. You're absolutely right. Perhaps maybe in the vacuum that we will have – excuse me, this draft, with those skill positions that everybody covets, perhaps maybe everybody will go back to basics and look at things like your offensive lineman or your defensive lineman. Maybe that's what they'll do. They'll do that sort of thing. And that's where we'll be seeing first-round draft picks going this year.
Well, that's where it should be anyway.
Probably.
That's what the good teams do. They draft their trench guys, and then they fill in with free agents, you know? You don't need to spend a first-round pick on a running back in today's NFL. You really don't. I mean, yeah, there's a Todd Gurley, but you don't get many Todd Gurleys. You get more, you know, C.J. Andersons and guys like that who walk in off as an undrafted free agent. You know, we hear that more and more about running backs. You ain't hearing no offensive linemen doing that as a general rule.
When is that going to translate to fantasy strategy? How about that one?
Well, I think it already kind of is swinging a little bit towards.
I think it's starting to, yeah.
Yeah, it's especially the receiver, you know, receivers. I think receivers are getting drafted higher. Maybe not so much quarterbacks, maybe a little bump in quarterbacks. I think people are going for your top shelf, you know, Julio Jones, you know, Dez Bryant. I think they're going a lot higher in the drafts. In most drafts now than running, you know, you're always going to have the running backs because you get the, you know, the 2-3 yard rushing touchdowns. But, you know, I think you're seeing it swing a little bit just like the league. And fantasy will swing, you know, as the NFL swings. And the NFL is clearly swinging as a passing off, you know, pass first, you know, type offense in most cases. So it would only be logical that that would follow.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm looking down the list here real quick. This Arizona game. Let's jump over real quick to the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Cincinnati Bengals. And basically what I wanted to look at, Brandon, A.J. McCarron's performance in the absence of Andy Dalton, because Andy Dalton left the game fairly early. Dalton only had five attempts at the time that he went down. So A.J. McCarron came in and played most of the game. McCarron was 22 of 32 for 280 yards with two touchdowns and two INTs. He ended up with a 90.6 quarterback rating against Pittsburgh, which, Brandon, isn't – that's not half bad. That's not too shabby. Considering
no, I'll give him a pass. On those picks.
Yeah, the kid came in cold off the bench and had to quick jump in there for Andy Dalton and, you know, manage the second or third best team in the AFC. Not too bad. And yet, what do I hear this week? I hear, oh, my God, this team's got to run with A.J. McCarron. I don't know. Any thoughts on this? I mean, could it be that bad? Could it really be that bad?
I don't think it's going to be as bad as Dallas, the situation, because I'll tell you a couple key reasons. One, the Bengals have a running game between Giovanni Bernard and Hill, Jeremy Hill. They have many good, talented receivers in Green, Marvin Jones. They got Eifert at tight end. You know, Sanu is like the third receiver, and Giovanni Bernard makes a lot of catches out of the backfield. I think McCarron has enough around him to make up for some, if he has, we don't even know, you know, if he has deficiencies as a starting quarterback. I mean, this was the first action he saw as far as I think they made a comment back, you know, live game action other than preseason since he was at Alabama. So, you know, the jury's probably out on him long run. Do I think he's going to hurt them? No. I think the Bengals are going to keep going. I don't think they're going to have a collapse, at least, like Dallas did when Roman went down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I hate to keep comparing it to that, but, I mean, Dallas Cowboys are clearly a different team without Romo.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they look lost where – I don't necessarily think the Bengals are going to be as bad off.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll wait and see. One of the points I made, I guess, in the promotion of our hold on a moment. I just want to pull it up real quick, see if I can find it. Oh, I got it here. In the promotion of our program this evening, for week 14, who'd have thunk that we'd be served up with Brock Osweiler, A.J. McCarron, Jimmy Clausen, Matt Hasselbeck, Matt Castle, Case Keenum, and Blaine Gabbert as your starting quarterbacks? Holy smokes, Brandon. Think about it. Those are all guys that have been in for starters, and that was all just this past week in week 14. Pretty crazy, isn't it? I mean, when you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
This has not been
a good season for the health of quarterbacks.
Nope. Nope. I mean, nobody would have thought that you would have had that many backup quarterbacks all in within 1 week and just 4 weeks, you know, remaining in the NFL season. Just crazy. All right, there you go. That's our show for this evening. I appreciate everybody tuning in with us again this evening. Appreciate Naj jumping in here with us from Atlanta, Georgia, and giving us a perspective on the Atlanta Falcons. I'll tell you what, next time, you want to make sure you are here on Thursday night for our Frat House Sports show. What number are we going to be at? We're going to be at number 123.
223,
I'm sorry. Yeah, thank you very much. 223 coming to you this Thursday night, 7 p.m. Eastern time. Be here for that one live right here on the Frat House Sports Radio Network. And then I will be back here with you again on Saturday afternoon while you're doing your Christmas wrapping. Be here. I'll be here to keep you company while you're doing your Christmas wrapping and bring you another relaxed Frat House Saturday afternoon, 2 p.m. Eastern time. Make sure you get out and take a look at our Facebook page, Frat House Sports. Leave spaces in between and look for a little purple icon. Give us a like. Well, in the meantime, hey, get out there and enjoy. I don't know what's on tonight. It's got to be a little NBA or NHL, I would think. Well, get out there and enjoy that, you know. But whatever's out there, go take a look at it. Yeah.